Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH. Know Your Risk Radio is hosted by Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often volatile markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Welcome to another of the most scintillating hours in finance radio. Said with tomorrow, as always, tongue in cheek, but we'll take it. It's like my client and good friend of mine, Rick, says, you know, hey, even if you are a one horse race, it still counts as a win. So we'll take it. But anyway, have a good show planned for today. I was telling the people on KTTH when they joined us, little bit truncated today, and I'm going to be completely honest, right? We're always completely transparent. Wish I had a really good business reason for that, but I don't. The reason we're a little truncated today is we are smack dab, right in the middle, people, of the club championship here. Now, don't be so impressed when I say club. I don't belong to a big fancy club. It's a nice club, but it's very inexpensive, very family geared, and we live in the neighborhood, and but it's a blast. It's not, you know, it's not as pretentious and, because I'm really not a country club guy. I love, Darren, are you like that? I love the perks, right? It's fun to be able to go out on the course whenever you want, you know, and you know, do all that kind of stuff. But I typically don't like, I'm a blue-collar guy by nature. You know, I don't want to sit around and puff on my pipe in my smoking jacket and talk about the, you know, what's happening down at Wall Street. You know what I mean? It's just not, and compare my horses to your horses, you know, my racing horses, you know, that are inevitably kept in Kentucky, right? And talk about my, you know, the launching of my new schooner. Reminds me of Judge Smales. You scratched my anchor. Anyway, it's not, you know, I'm more of the Rodney Dangerfield type, you know, if we're speaking Caddyshack terminology. But anyway, nonetheless, it is a club championship, and we take these things very seriously. And we had an okay start yesterday. Not a great match to start off with, but then won our second match. So we're right in the mix here, folks. We're right in the mix. This is big stuff. So you probably thought the most important tournament happening this weekend was the Open Championship, and you would be wrong. It's not. It's the club championship. It's priorities here. So anyway, the other thing is we've heard so many talks, so many questions lately about crypto, about Bitcoin, about all these kind of things. And, you know, we've talked about the responsible way that we think that you can own it. You can own some. It's all about how much you size it, right? For those of you that go, oh, it's poison. Listen, guys, you may end up being right, okay? But the point we've made on this show many times is if 1.5% of our portfolio is in something like that, even if it does end up being snake oil, it's not a big enough position to hurt us. Do we want to lose it? No, but it's all about sizing these things. The flip side of that is for like our clients that about 6-7 months ago, we bought 8 months ago, 9 months ago, something like that. We bought a 1.5% portfolio position of Bitcoin for our clients and right around 14,000 and we sold it at 58. Okay, so that 1.5% position added about 3.5 to 4% of performance to the entire portfolio. That did matter. A 4% pop to the portfolio? That's not a bad quarter, let alone a good, you know, right? Because you're like, oh yeah, well you didn't make a whole lot because you only bet 1.5%. But if I've got a portfolio with $1 million, that one little 1.5% position made me 40, 45 grand. That matters. Right? And yet at the same time, the position isn't big enough to hurt you. So we've always kind of approached it, but like I've said, I've always focused on the negative because I think people should be warned. I run into a high net worth new guy coming on, very sharp guy too, and in his previous portfolio is his last advisor, and he's got a very big portfolio, meaning that he doesn't need to take a lot of risk, right, to fund his retirement. And his previous advisor had as much as 25% in cryptocurrency. Okay, now I would sit there and say, hey, that's too much, right? But there is potential with cryptocurrency. It's not a complete shell game. It's not a complete Ponzi scheme. And I think for people that think it is, I think that you would be wise to hear the interview that we are going to run. And this is precisely why we're going to run it. First of all, this interview didn't happen we did this interview back in December of 2019. The show, the audience has grown a ton since then. For instance, when we did this interview, Portland wasn't even on. I don't even think Cairo was on at that point. Anyway, so for those of you out there that think crypto is snake oil, I understand. I'm a value-based guy. I lean much heavier toward your side of it just for a variety of different reasons. I think there is a lot of bubbly aspects of it, and I don't think Bitcoin is going to be the currency of the new world. However, I think we'd be wise to listen to very smart, measured, experienced people who do think it is going to be important. More importantly, sensible people who are not out there advocating that you sell your home and all of your stocks and put it all in Bitcoin. I think those people, even if Bitcoin ends up being a success, that is a horrifically irresponsible way to do it. Right? It's kind of like we've all played the game, right? What I should have done is taken all of my money and put it in X. Well, that's investing via hindsight. Okay, and for every person you know that that's worked out with, there's 100 who got destroyed. And so no matter how good it looks, I sympathize, right? You guys know about our GameStop trades and Bed Bath & Beyond and, you know, so many of these other ones that we've had great returns. You guys know the story, Bitcoin, we did it with Bitcoin, you know. You sit back and you go, boy, I wish I would have. You know, we had one recently, Peabody Energy. We bought it at $3.70. Today it's at $10.50 or whatever. It's 3 months later. Tripled that. Sit there and go, man, I wish I'd have bet more. And then you go, no, because that's not the way this works. Right? Because the inverse could easily be true. You put up 10, 15, 20% of your portfolio and the thing gets smashed. Right? Again, risk management. Are we good no matter what happens? Right? And I just think it's great, you know, that this gets back to portfolio composition in general. You know, you look at the average portfolio, you show me a 60-40 standard bond portfolio, not only in the good times can that not keep up. Not only in the good times is our 60-40 version using, you know, the bond replacement strategy in our stock portfolios, you know, they're blowing it away in the good times. But the real value, in my opinion, is when the storm hits, they hold up like a champ. Meanwhile, a 60-40 stock bond portfolio or typical mutual fund allocation gets blown to bits. It gets back into that whole risk management story, right? And I think that has to be ever present. And it's crazy to me that it's not. But anyway, in an effort to properly manage risk, we have to look at both sides. Again, what if it ends up being really big? We probably need a part of that. Right? So how do we do it in a smart way? Anyway, we've talked a lot about the things that can go wrong. We've talked a lot about valuations. We've talked a lot about bubbles. I want to present the other side. And the reason I want to present the other side is through people that have been on the Bitcoin crypto thing right from the beginning, I think there are very few measured, responsible people that have done it in a very ethical and honorable way. And in my opinion, Mike Krieger is at the top of that list. I may differ from him on my I don't have faith in Bitcoin. Mike is also the investor of his own money and doesn't manage other people's money, so he's got a little more latitude. You know, so he can be more aggressive, but I think he's one of the most thoughtful, measured people. He doesn't just own Bitcoin, right? But I also think he speaks most articulately and without the BS that so many other guys speak about when it comes to Bitcoin. And I wanted to air that interview again. And I want to air it, especially for those of you that don't think it has a place. Something I have learned the hard way in investing is before you summarily dismiss something, understand it, right? Understand what it is. Because I thought Amazon was a joke, right? There's so many of these things that I thought was a joke. I thought when Facebook IPO'd that it was ridiculously priced and it was going to get crushed. And I can fully admit to you that one of the errors I made was not really digging into what those companies did, not really trying to understand them. And so one of the things I've learned is even if it sounds ridiculous, educate yourself. Because a lot of things sound ridiculous. I'm reminded of my dad's sentiment, and I can completely understand it. They were one of the only small regional brokerage firms in this area, and they had a chance to be involved in the original IPO of Microsoft stock. And their attitude at the time was, the money's not going to be in software. The money's going to be in the companies that actually make computers. Okay, well, that couldn't have been more wrong. And my dad has discussed that, and I've learned a lot from that because it makes sense. I understand his thought process. But and he'll even admit this at the time. He didn't dig into it far enough. He didn't try to understand that story good enough. And that was the situation that taught him his lesson. And he digs into things now. And I think we have to do that. So for those of you, this is even more so for the skeptics, for the people that think it is complete nonsense. Give this interview a listen and pay it some time. So anyway, we got to run. We're ending coming to the end of this segment. The other thing is I never like to load these shows up with too much content because we got the road show coming up, the virtual road show coming up Thursday. That's another reason why it's a little bit of a truncated show. Guys, if you've been listening to the show, you're not obligated by anything. We don't keep calling you. This isn't a sales trick. You can talk to existing clients as references. The road show, the value to the road show is A, it gets a chance for us to speak in a little more personal setting. The other thing is that if you're interested in all in what we do, it's a way of to get a non-obligatory look at it, right? To look at the performance, look at what we're talking about, look at how the portfolios act, to figure out what we do from soup to nuts on the planning side, on the estate planning side, Social Security, long-term care. We run you through the whole process in 30 minutes. At the end, you log off the Zoom, and if you don't want to talk to us again, you don't talk to us. If you do, you book a meeting to talk to one of my advisors, and then we build a portfolio that we think is acceptable to you, and we compare it to what you've currently got, and then we give it to you and tell you, call us if you want to go forward. If you don't, best of luck. Okay, why do we do it that way? Because we don't need to rely on gimmicks and ways to hook you in. The other thing is I just think it's the best way to do business. Here's what we can do for you. Here's how. No sales, no gimmicks. If you like it, let us know. We'd love to partner with you, right? So anyway, call 866-779-RISK to sign up for that, or you can go to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You can go to knowyourriskradio.com, but bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com is where you can go sign up a little bit. If you guys hear that buzzing in the background, I think we're having some kind of test here or something right now. I'm not sure exactly what that is. Hopefully that's not coming too loud. Anyway, good time for us to take a break though. As always, guys, follow up, sign up for the virtual roadshow. We've only got about 30 spots left. This one filled up quicker than normal, but, we have a hard stop at 100 again, not a gimmick. It just is what it is. Anyway, so give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com to sign up for the virtual seminar coming up this Thursday, the 22nd at 3 p.m. Don't want to miss it. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
How do you know your finances and investments right now in today's economy are positioned for a successful retirement? Join me at Zach Abraham's Know Your Risk virtual roadshow this Thursday, right after my show at 3. Zach, I'm excited to be there.
Dory, we've taken Bulwark's entire investment and retirement planning process, the same one you and Suzanne went through, and we've condensed it down into a 30-minute class. We'll answer all the big questions. Do you need estate planning? Long-term care? When should you take Social Security? How much money do you need to retire? And we're also going to show everyone who attends how to protect their portfolio against loss while still growing their assets.
Join me at the Know Your Risk virtual roadshow with Zach Abraham this Thursday, right after my show at 3. Sign up now at knowyourriskradio.com. You'll get a free copy of Zach's booklet, Common Sense Investing. Space is limited for this free live webinar. Reserve your spot now at knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. All right. So now, kind of a longer introduction segment there. Let's get into the market update. What's happening? Again, you really can't look at the indexes here. We see it in our own portfolios. I'm not really sure. One of the things you don't want to do, people tune into these kinds of shows for answers. I'm always going to be honest and tell you when I don't know. I don't really know what to glean from this market action, and I'm convinced that nobody does. there's one of two things happening here. Either this is kind of your typical back and forth, you know, washing machine, sloshing around type of summer where you get lower volumes, weird stock movements. And at the end of the summer, it's kind of all for naught. And that it's either that or there are some pressures building and a lack of buying conviction that's coming through because you see it in the lower volumes again, which is normal during summer. But the other thing to me is this trend continues where we're seeing lower and lower volatility levels on the index or pretty shallow levels. You're trading right now pretty much between 15 and 20. So people are like, oh, it spiked up 15%. Look, if you've got a VIX reading under 20, the market's not freaked out. Okay, so you provide some latitude there. And then you also look at volatility levels compared to a year ago, right? Now, obviously, there was, you know, crazier stuff going on. But my whole point is volatility on the indexes. And then just look at the way the indexes move. It looks like a smooth ride. You pop the cover, and even big parts of the index are moving really largely, right? With a lot of delta, a lot of movement, and a lot of spread between how stocks are moving. Like I said, even the big caps. So the single stock volatility remains to be pretty exceptional. And I haven't looked at the exact reading, so if you know it out there and maybe it's not crazy elevated, I'm just saying it's just kind of chaos underneath the surface, and yet the whole index itself looks pretty serene. So, I think it's one of two things. I think you've got pressure building for kind of a blowout in volatility and a sharp pullback at some point in the near future, or this is kind of a consolidation period, you know, where the market's kind of gathering itself now that all indexes are right at new all-time highs. Again, we still haven't seen that follow through that makes me feel really confident. Charts look bullish. You can't argue that, but just not that follow through that you'd expect to see. So I think we kind of got to still, you know, keep our eyes on that and kind of see which way things break. And like I said, typically I wouldn't be that worried about it, but we always got to remember, right, what's the backdrop? We are operating in the most expensive and most over-indebted market in market history, right? We got to keep that in perspective. So the other thing, too, is and I think this is part of the volatility story. On a day like today, I'm sitting here, it's 11:30. You got oil up nicely on the day, 1.5%, 2%. Oil stocks getting slammed. Again, I could make guesses about what that is. I don't know. I just think this market is still in that knife fight that we told you about. Certain times it's been really hard on tech. Right now it's really hard on those reflation stories and commodities and things like that. For those of you that haven't been in energy, I'm not saying it's here yet. I think that you're about to get another buying opportunity. And this is sort of what, I mean, it's never fun, but this is sort of what we've been looking for the last month or two, kind of a sell-off in these kind of things, which is why we've raised cash and put some hedges on the portfolio. So we've been hit a little bit this week with markets, but, you know, holding up okay. And like I said, these are the kind of moves that give you another chance to get in there and buy the things you should have bought. So we got to keep an eye on the energy complex. The other thing is too, you know, it's not just our show. If you listen to other financial podcasts, the story of the day is inflation versus deflation. Guys, get used to it. That's going to be the story. To me, I don't really think there's anything more important right now going on in markets. And I don't think there's anything more important as it relates to our returns that we're going to realize over the next 5 to 10 years. It's getting that inflation deflation story correct. And I think if you do, I think regardless of what happens in the markets, I think there's going to be unbelievable opportunities. You get it wrong, and I think it's not going to matter what you do. I think you're going to get hit. So anyway, and if you want to know how we're combating that, I think that that's another great virtual roadshow type issue. You know, we talk about the threats to the portfolio, inflation specifically, and we talk about how we hedge against it. We talk about how we turn that into an opportunity as opposed to something that's going to negatively impact you. So again, this Thursday, 3:00, the 22nd, sign up for it. Virtual Roadshow doesn't cost anything. 30-minute presentation of what we do, how we do it, our planning process, the performance of our portfolios, no tricks, no gimmicks. You can sit there on your couch with a cup of coffee or even a cocktail and just listen to how we do things. If you're interested afterwards, we can set up a meeting, a conversation with you and I or one of our advisors. And like I said, we just lay it out flat. Here's how it works. Here's how we do it. Here's the performance. Here's what it costs. No gimmicks. We really believe that we've got the best solution. And when you've got the best solution, you know, if you've got the best athletes on your team, you don't need to go out there with real fancy things. You need to execute what you do and just let the talent win out. I think it's the same side on investing. When you feel confident about what you do and your process, we don't need to dress it up with a bunch of frills and gimmicks, offer free pizza giveaways if you sign up for a client. You know, we don't need to do any of that. So if you want no nonsense and transparency, sign up for this thing. If you want to talk with us, we'd be happy to do it. If not, hopefully it made you a better investor and gave you some things to think about. So anyway, you can do that again by calling us 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. And then just to remind you guys as well, remember, the only people hearing this radio show are people that live in the Northwest, Portland and Seattle area. That's where we're based. So I'm not some dude from, you know, Missouri or Tampa Bay talking to you on the, you know, the other thing too is if you're interested, you actually sit there going, you know, I'm interested. I think this guy's got some good things to say. But, you know, I'm not just trusting some guy over the phone with my money. I need to meet him face to face. Well, you can. Our offices are down here in Tacoma. So you can schedule a meeting at our offices too. Hey, I think you'll enjoy meeting the people that work here more so than you'll enjoy meeting me. But nevertheless, we can do that as well. So anyway, sign up for the free virtual roadshow coming up this Thursday, the 22nd, 3 p.m. this afternoon. Got about, what, about 20 slots left? Yeah, about 20 slots left. Have a hard cap at 100. Anyway, got to take a quick break. Now, after we come back for the segment, this is where we're going to start the interview with Mike Krieger. For those of you that do not like crypto, for those of you that have your doubts, I'm with you. I get it. I sympathize. I understand. You should listen to this most of all, right? I think this is the most important for you guys to listen to because I understand. I'm sympathized. I get what you're talking about. And yet Mike is a very sensible, very sharp guy whose ethics and honor and reliability just – He's a guy worth listening to. And I think there's some good value. And this is to understand the other side. Should we be cautious with Bitcoin? Yes. Should we be cautious with crypto? Should we always be cautious? Should we be skeptical yet not cynical? Right? And skeptics study the things. Cynics write it off. We want to be skeptical. We don't want to be cynical. So be a skeptic and listen to what Mike has to say in this interview. And I think it delivers a lot of value. And I really hope you enjoy it. Wish me the best of luck in the tournament, and we'll try to bring a win home. I know my son would love that. Both of them would, but my 9-year-old, more importantly, he's kind of a golf fanatic. Anyway, I hope you guys have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the interview. We will be back next week. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
How do you know your finances and investments right now in this economy are positioned for a successful retirement? Well, you can join me at Zach Abraham's Know Your Risk Virtual Roadshow this Thursday, right after my show. Zach, now's the time for everyone to take a hard look at their investment strategy.
Dory, there could not be a more prescient time. I'll answer all the big questions on investors' minds because I can promise you if you're incorporating some of the long-running investment strategies in today's markets, like a basic 60-40 stock bond portfolio, you're taking a serious gamble, and now is not the time to be gambling your retirement.
Learn all about Zach's retirement planning and investment strategies at his Know Your Risk virtual roadshow this Thursday. I'll be there too, right after my show at 3 o'clock. Space is limited for this free live webinar. Make your reservation now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
What does outside-the-box investing really look like? Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management, and see a side-by-side comparison of your current portfolio versus one Zach would recommend. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com.
As we age, we can't always plan on good health, but you can plan long-term care coverage to give peace of mind to you and your family. Story Monson, a great way to learn about long-term care and have your questions answered is to join my friends from 525 Advisors for their free long-term care planning live webinar Saturday, July 24th at 9 a.m. You'll learn so much. 525 Advisors will explain how long-term care works, what the coverage pays for, and you'll discover all the new options and different ways to fund a plan. Then when you're ready, 525 Advisors will design a custom plan with you, like they did for my wife and me. Our plan even has lifetime benefits that pay our estate back if we never use it. I love how much time they spent with us. And it's not just me. Read the reviews. People love working with Brian and Madeline at 525 Advisors. So get the great peace of mind long-term care coverage gave my family and me. Sign up now for the free live webinar Saturday, July 24th at 9 a.m. Go to 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for joining us today. And it's been a while, been a little bit, but we've got an interview, and it's one that I'm really pumped and excited to bring to you guys today. It's a guy that I have been reading for quite a while. Interesting to finally get a chance to talk to him. And one of those interviews where you just it kind of catches you off guard because you go, you know, I never really thought I'd be having a conversation with this guy. But then reading his stuff was part of my journey, part of me getting to where I am. And he was a source of information for me and a source of confirmation for what I was seeing. And he's become he's been a prominent voice in financial media for quite a while. I'll say financial alternative media. But anyway, without further ado, that special guest with us today is Mike Krieger of LibertyBlitzkrieg.com. It's been a great source of information for me. So first of all, I would recommend that you check out his website, LibertyBlitzkrieg.com, and then on Twitter at Liberty Blitz. So Mike, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to the show.
Oh, hey, Zach. It's great to be on your show. I don't go on, financially focused stuff as much anymore because it's not, it doesn't consume my life like it used to. So it'll be fun, to talk to a different audience or a more financially focused audience. So thanks for having me on.
Oh, you bet. I'm assuming you would agree. I think to be truly financially focused, I see you as being truly financially focused. It may not jive with CNBC's definition of financially focused, but it sure jives with mine. And first and foremost, you're not just a guy howling on the internet. I want the readers to understand your background. You went to Duke, studied economics. You got hired by Lehman Brothers as a oil and gas analyst. Then you went to Sanford C. Bernstein on Wall Street, a prominent and respected Wall Street firm. You started writing there, and you had a heck of a career going on in Wall Street. And then, surprising, to so many of the people out there chasing the carrot, then you decided to leave. So let's start there, Mike. I don't have time, but there's so much good stuff that you've done on the internet. People can find the whole story, but give us an abridged rundown of where you're at today and how you got there and why you'd walk away from a really promising career on Wall Street that had a ton of momentum.
That's all correct, and it's a strange journey. I think 99.9% of people in my shoes would definitely not have left, and probably if I hadn't left, life would have been easier, but not as interesting, and I would certainly be a lot less happy, I believe, and content, versus where I am. But it was a crazy choice. But to give you from a conventional standpoint, that is. But to give you a little background, so I'm a New York City kid originally. That's where I grew up, in the heart of Manhattan. Went to Duke, as you said. I really didn't have much of a, I wasn't that thoughtful at the time, and I guess a lot of 18, 19 year olds aren't. But about the world and what I wanted and meaning and purpose and all that. It just wanted to sort of enjoy life and, whatever. And so I sort of stumbled my way into Wall Street. I did like markets. I always had that sort of, the way my mind works is a macro, is from just works macro, always has, big picture. But I also really love the idea that every day you wake up and there's a million things to look at and a million new sources of information to consume and then apply that in a sort of a very, P&L way to in real life, which the markets allowed. So I was always fascinated by it, but I wasn't one of these guys, and there were a lot of them at Duke that spent 4 years saying, I'm going to go to Wall Street. I'm going to spend these 4 years trying to get to Wall Street. I didn't do that, but I did major in economics. And then when I was going into Wall Street, it was the biggest class ever, pretty much. It was 2000. I literally started in July of 2000. So they hired a lot of people, which is probably how I snuck in there in the first place. but anyway, ended up at Lehman Brothers, as you said, equity research. I did 5 years, in the models. I was in a cubicle, basically dug into a model for 12, 13 hours a day. And I did that for 5 years, at which point I had enough of that. and moved on to Sanford C. Bernstein, as you said, which is a, you know, very much a research-driven firm. That's what they do. They just do really deep dives on industries and companies. And there I was a commodities desk analyst. I really sat on the trading desk analyzing the whole space and helping to sell the research analyst's material as well. And it was there that towards the end, I mean, as you say, you know, my career, when I left Bernstein, when I resigned, I was at the top of my game. I mean, I was making a ton of money for you know, someone that age, 30, 31 years old. And, you know, I had a huge bright future ahead of me in a conventional sense. But when the financial crisis hit and I saw the response to it, right, and I saw that all of the nation's resources were being geared to saving people like me, who were the last people that needed to be saved, in a very crony and dishonest way, it just, some sort of light bulb went off in my head. And you know, my ego, you know, this was fortunate for me. My ego was sort of able to die a little bit. You know, I had a huge ego, obviously, at that point, right? Like, you're young, you're in New York, you think you're amazing, right? Because you're making a lot of money,
right,
and you're successful, and you think it's because you're so amazing. But what I realized with the bailouts was that the only reason I'm making money like this, and sure, I was good at my job, but the big picture reason was because the system is set up to enrich people doing that sort of a job. And at that point, it became a lot less interesting. And I sort of, you know, I felt like I didn't have anything else to prove anymore. And I felt dirty, you know, in the industry. And so I left, you know, I quit as soon as I got my bonus in January of 2010, literally the day it hit my bank account, I quit. And it was a great moment, but, you know, it's been an interesting journey since, you know, 10 years. This January will be 10 years since I left. So, you know, that's the background on Wall Street.
Yeah, no, you know, we were talking off air, and I mean it earnestly and honestly. You know, we've had several guys on the show that have kind of that have been in the same similar place for me, meaning that you were one of the sources that I was reading on my own journey around that exact same time frame. Because I think there's some of us, and I think you'd agree, it feels incredibly lonely, and I'm honestly shocked that more people haven't, you know, woken up and come more this way and open their eyes and seen, you know, behind the curtain and seen really what's going on. But we were talking off air about how disillusioning, you know, how it was just there was so much disillusion and I don't know, I wouldn't call it depression, but just, you know, shaking your head going, wait a second, this isn't what I thought it was. And then realizing what's really pulling the levers and what really matters. And that in a lot of ways, this is no longer a free market. In a lot of ways, they've cracked down on freedom in general. So reading your stuff was part of my journey and part of my waking up and realizing that, you know, there is no there. That this is a charade. It's a shell of what it used to be. And so, first of all, I applaud you for what you're doing and then speaking out and, you know, trying to educate people, which is something we do on this radio show, or we attempt to do. Obviously, I manage money. I run an RIA. And so, you know, we talk a lot of finance, but trying to give our clients that background of really what's happening in the world. And so, you know, first and foremost, I just wanted to say thank you, because you've been one of those voices that's really helped clarify and bring, you know, focus to the things that were bothering me and pointing things out. And that's why I'd encourage everybody to go to your website and get into your reading. So now fast forward, we moved to Colorado. You've had enough of the rat race. You've had enough of being part of the slum, the financial slum, as I refer to it. And you've essentially retired from markets and you manage your own money now. I know that you're not horrifically involved in stock markets anymore. But you became very focused on gold and then Bitcoin. I'm assuming that's the proper order from reading your stuff. But tell us how that transition happened, because, again, it intrigues me because, I got very into gold as well right around the same time. Kind of tell me how you came to that realization and how that move started happening for you.
Okay. Yeah, so a few things. I mean, first, I just want to touch upon what you mentioned about your own journey, because every single person, and I know quite a few, right? I am a lot actually that has gone through something similar, and most of us, you know, around a similar age, it's going to be the financial crisis that right. basically was when you first peered behind the curtain and said, "Oh boy," you know. And so when you peer behind that, you either dig deeper and accept it, and then go into a period of depression, or you just sort of say, "Oh, I don't want to look at that," and you forget about it, which right. a lot of people do as well. But you know, for people like me and you who are just very curious, I'm assuming you can't look the other way once you've seen it. You know, you've seen it. You can't forget it. And so there was for me a period of loneliness and depression, right, where I felt nobody understood me really, right. Very few people were writing about what I thought. The people that were tending to write about what I thought were big into gold, right? I think that's one of the things that happens. Yeah. The other is, of course, if you think at that time that, let's put it this way, let's rewind for a second. I mean, if you've been living up to 2008, if you'd been living on Earth for, let's say, 30 years or so and paid some attention to markets or worked in markets, you understood that, of course, there's the Fed. Of course, there's influences that manipulate markets. But there was always a bit of freedom to them, right? There was always a bit of, like, chaos and stuff over the years. And so my assumption around 2008 and 9 was that there would be at least some cleansing allowed, or at least if not allowed, forced upon the market by economic nature. I was wrong about that, right, in the short term.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why I was wrong. The reason I was wrong is because I did not fully understand the country we live in. Right, as you said, I didn't understand that we don't have a democracy, we don't have a republic, we don't have a constitution anymore. I was naive in that sense. A lot of people knew that, but I did not. Right, I was too busy making money on Wall Street to actually thoughtfully think about what had happened in the prior 8 years of the 21st century post 9/11, when we lost so much freedom in a lot of ways. And so the more I started digging, the more I started realizing, well, okay, none of this is like I thought it was. You know, we really do live in very much what Sheldon Wolin calls an inverted totalitarianism.
Yep.
We have a totalitarian structure, an oligarchy, a feudalistic structure in a lot of ways. It's very much hidden. And those that, you know, sort of benefit from it certainly don't question it. And we continue to live in that. But the point being is, you know, this was the right way to think about 2008, 2009 at the time. You know, the U.S. government, right, the state, went to Iraq because they wanted to go to Iraq. They lied about it, right? Hundreds of thousands of people dead. Countries destroyed. And Iraq's just one example, right? So if the state is willing to do that, if the state is willing to sacrifice hundreds of thousands of people, maybe millions across all of these wars, $6.4 trillion has been spent on the war on terror since 2001, if they're willing to do that, why wouldn't they be willing to do anything to markets? And that is what I did not appreciate at the time. And that's exactly what the last 10 years have shown me, is that the power structure in this country, right, is so invested in empire and financialization, that they view it as a war, right? So I think the Fed and the government, across administrations, views propping up assets, right, the asset bubble that we have, the biggest asset bubble in world history, especially with debt, they see it as a war. You know, they literally see it as a national security thing. And so if I had realized that the empire would throw every single thing it had, every lie, every cheat, every corruption at propping up assets, I probably would have seen things differently. But I didn't have that view of the country at that point. I did not have the accurate assessment of what we were really dealing with. And quite frankly, now I think it's pretty clear 10 years later, that is what we're dealing with.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. I've described it before. It's sort of the merger of philosophy and finance, because you really we think that we're dealing with a spreadsheet world and a data driven world, you know, in terms of, you know, input this and this is the profit margin and this is what runs things. And then you realize, well, it plays a role, but it's a side role. It really is a side role. This is about power. This is about the creation of money. This is about positioning you and your corporation as close as you can to that spigot, to that power, whether it's, you know, the senator or the Federal Reserve or what, you know, whatever it is. Maybe it's hiring a former Federal Reserve chairman to be on your board. It's the positioning of the power and the proximity to that spigot that has trumped everything. And right down to, like you said, you know, controlling markets and making the machine keep going. And you know, this whole idea that making markets rise, right, and suppressing volatility is good for, and it's good for the average investor. And he goes, oh, thank God the Federal Reserve jumped in. And it just infuriates me because I sit there and I go, look, I understand nobody wants to look at their account and see that they lost money, but volatility is your friend. Market crashes are what cleans out the muck. It's what pushes assets into the hands of other people, right? It even though you don't think it, it's the, if we suppress volatility, there is no turnover in terms of who has the assets, who has the money, and who has the power. And it's you know, that's this hijacking of public markets. And it's infuriating to me. And it's been going on for some time. And I think you've pointed that out, you know, that out so well. This is not new. But to me, I want to get into so many other topics, but I want to get your thoughts on this. I came to a realization when I was watching Noam Chomsky's Requiem for an American Dream, which, again, is strange. Me and Noam Chomsky are strange bedfellows. I grew up very much on the capitalist conservative side of things. In most ways, I still am, you know, much more on that side of things and that side of thinking. Although I have unidentified that with, I don't think of myself as being Republican, right? I'm more libertarian. But I point back to, and I feel like so many people dance around this, but they don't get to the issue. To me, everything points back, and there's other factors, but the biggest thing that I see is everything points back to 1971. Everything points to when we went off the gold standard, government no longer had a report card. There was no way to hold them accountable. What are your thoughts on that, and do you see the similar thing? And we kind of walk me through your take on that.
Okay, sure. So first of all, yeah, like as far as Chomsky, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up because, again, you know, people, this is what keeps people divided and unthinking. You know, so someone that, let's say, considers themselves a capitalist or a libertarian, whatever, you know, and they hear Chomsky or like read this by Chomsky, they'll say, oh, no, that guy's, you know, this crazy leftist, I'm not reading it.
Right.
And that's just so intellectually, you're being an intellectual midget because whether you concur with Chomsky's solutions or what he thinks needs to be done, the man is a brilliant describer of what we're in, you know, what we're living in. I mean, I've been listening, sometimes on YouTube, I'll listen to stuff from this guy like, you know, 20, 30 years ago. I'm just like, man, yeah. People knew, you know, people knew a lot of this stuff, you know. It's been going on for a while. The national security state has been going on for a while. So I think you're asking about the gold standard. So I really think we need to see this whole thing from a very big picture standpoint. And really, when the modern American empire is what we're dealing with, right?
Right.
And that empire flexes its muscles over the decades in different ways. Now, I would say the beginning of the end for the republic, right, or any semblance of self-government at all, happened immediately after World War II, with the creation of the OSS, which was the precursor to the CIA. Once that happened, you really started, you got immediately what Eisenhower warned of, the military-industrial complex. And that was the beginning of the end. And so at that point, you know, American empire was exercised through strength, through actual strength, right? I mean, there was a gold standard. You know, the U.S. had almost the whole world's manufacturing base. It was the only place that wasn't bombed to smithereens. So the empire was there, right? It was born in earnest after World War II, but it really exercised power in a more conventional way. 1971 is where the U.S. empire figured out a way to exercise power without, in a non-traditional sense, in other words, via the fiat dollar, and that's what we've been living through ever since. So by not having to exercise empire through traditional means, right, actual wealth, actual, let's say, power, the dollar allowed financialization and banking to dominate the world, and it's a much lazier way of doing it, but it's, you know, it's a cheaper way, and it's a very, very, what I like to say is the fiat U.S. dollar as reserve currency is the most powerful geopolitical weapon that's ever existed.
Yep.
And it continues to exist right to this day, but what that's also meant is a hollowing out of the rest of American society. Right. We've seen rapid growth in debt. We've seen rapid growth in financial oligarch power, financial services power. And we've seen, and we see now the ability to ruin countries just by using a dollar that's backed by nothing, right? So that's where we're at right now, right? I mean, it's been 50 years almost since the financial empire, right? The financialized empire really took hold. And, you know, my view is that by 2025, that financial empire will be in clear decline. But yeah, that's how I see it. So yes, 71 was really important, but let's not think that, you know, the U.S. had already died in a lot of ways, right? The constitutional United States had already died in a lot of ways right after World War II.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. It was interesting to me. I totally agree with that timeline. And I think if you're a student of history, it's really hard to see it any other way. Obviously, I would entertain other ideas and listen to people with other opinions. But one of the things that frustrates me is that even listening to a guy like Chomsky, like I said, strange bedfellow, but if you listen to that, if you watch that documentary, he dances all around it and he never addresses it. He points to all these things around 1971 and late 60s, even talks about post-World War II. But I love the way you set that up. The ball was already in motion, right? It was beginning to roll. And I feel like, or the way that I view it is 71 was the gloves coming off. It was, you know, here we are in all of our grand splendor, and we're not even going to fake it anymore. We're going to tell you there's nothing backing it. And the beautiful thing about that is it removes the control. It removes the constraints. I've tried to explain it to people. Look, if you still had a gold standard, do you think we would have fought as many wars? You know, no. There's no. We wouldn't have been able to afford it, right? There would have been constraints. Think how many lives have been lost due to just go. Like you said, the ball was in motion, but just going off the gold standard. Anyway, it's perplexing to me. Now I want to get to your thoughts on gold and how you got there, because obviously, all of this points to, the need or obviously, in our opinion, the need for some type of, you know, not an asset that can't be controlled by government, an asset that holds people accountable. How did that exploration or that move into gold happen with you?
Yes. Okay. So a few things, and I'm going to put Bitcoin in here too, because I'm as big of a proponent of Bitcoin, probably even more so than gold for a variety of reasons we can get into if you'd like at this point. But I am, you know, if people ask me, what should they be owning? You know, I would say, you should have some USD, because you need to live, and assets like Bitcoin and gold can be volatile. But other than that, you know, I have some Bitcoin, some gold, and some US dollars. I mean, that's how I am, right?
Yeah.
But look, with gold, the reason I first got into it, right, and explored it is because, you know, it's pretty simple. You know, when you look at the debt, and you look at how this thing can play out over, you know, any sort of long period of time, it becomes very clear that, you know, what I like to say recently is populism is inflationary. We're going to the idea. Look, who has a lot of the debt? Millennials, right?
Yep.
Who's now the largest generation in America? Millennials. How are they going to vote? Right? I mean, you're already starting to see it with stuff like MMT becoming more popular and Green New Deal and all this stuff. I mean, there's no way, in my view, that this doesn't get resolved via just some sort of debt jubilee. And in that kind of an environment, you know, gold is an asset you want to hold. If you have physical gold, obviously there's no counterparty risk, which is very important, you know, in today's financial world. And it's sort of just the reset asset. And don't forget, I mean, you know, I got quiet on gold for a while after, you know, I realized, you know, sort of like what we discussed before, when I realized that the entire American empire was 100% dedicated to keeping a financial bubble alive, that's when I realized, okay, well, we need to take a step back here. You know, they've won for now, right?
Yes.
The cycle. And that was, let's say, 2011 to 2011, October 2011, September was the high in gold. And then I started getting more bullish publicly last September-ish, because, you know, well, it was 7 years, right? It was a nice cycle for me. But also I started looking geopolitically, things changing. And as China and the U.S. tensions continue to increase, you know, central banks and governments are going to play in gold. I mean, that's really where they are. When, you know, a lot of the gold bug rhetoric over the last, let's say post-financial crisis, was that everyone was going to buy physical gold, and, you know, fund managers were going to buy it, and there was going to be, you know, there wasn't going to be enough physical, and the price would explode. Well, it never happened, right?
Right.
And part of the reason it never happened is because the system is set up for that not to happen. You know, you're not. What happens if, like, large asset managers all of a sudden call London and say, I want, you know, 1,000 tons of gold right now? You know, what do they get threatened? I'm sure they do. You know, so it's sort of disallowed, in a sense, from the current financial system, the way it's structured. You know, just that's how the empire runs. But once you start having geopolitical tensions, legitimate, like, nation-state superpower versus nation-state superpower kind of thing, that's where I think, you know, you can have the real run on gold.
All right, so guys, due to time constraints, we got to cut the interview off. But if you want to hear the rest of it, which I really think you should, there is nobody that talks about crypto who I think has more credibility and knowledge than Mike. Listen to what he has to say, because, again, we want to be skeptical. We don't want to be cynical. And as always, to hear the rest of that, you can just go to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Google that. You can go to Know Your Risk Radio Stitcher, iTunes, you name it. And then you can listen to the podcast whenever you want. You can listen to the shows and the interviews separately. It's way easier. So do that. And then also, do not forget, Virtual Roadshow coming up this Thursday, the 22nd at 3 p.m. You're going to want – you don't even have to be on the phone talking to us. If you have any interest in how we're doing what we're doing, can we really make you safer, lower your fees, increase your performance – just see how all of our portfolios are done. We walk you through our planning process, performance of the portfolios, how they're managed, how they're constructed, what your fees are, how we do estate planning, how we do income planning, the whole deal. So if you're interested in all or have been, this is the easiest, lowest, right, commitment way to do it. And if you want to talk to me or one of our advisors afterwards, you just say the word and we give you a call. It's that simple. No tricks, no gimmicks. Anyway, go to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com, sign up for the virtual roadshow this Thursday, 3 o'clock, the 22nd, or you can give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You guys know the drill. Have a wonderful weekend. And thank you for listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast on 770 and Cairo in Seattle and KLX in Portland. We'll be back next week. Have a good one. This is the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham now at knowyourriskradio.com. Zach will be back with more Know Your Risk Radio next Saturday at noon on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.